tuned into the online broadcast network. AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, everyone. We're back again. At least one of us with the, well, there's two of us, but we'll explain the rest later. We're the Good Wife After Show, Season 6, Episode 14, Mind's Eye. And right off the top, let's just say, if you haven't gone onto YouTube and you're not subscribing to AfterBuzz TV, let's correct that right now. Subscribe to the network so you can see this program and all the other fantastic programs. Check us out also on SoundCloud and iTunes. And I'm Tara Johnson. You can reach me on Twitter at TJ Wagging Her Tail. And tonight I have a silent but participating and willing. Hi.
Hey, guys.
I'm Bobby. Like Alicia, I have no voice. You're talking about committing to a storyline. Bobby, you have committed to this storyline.
I can talk like this, so if you can hear it, that's perfect. And if you can't, then Tara, it's your baby tonight.
Well, I said to Bobby, you know what? There's some people out there who might like this voice. So if you like this voice and want Bobby to keep this, you know, raspy, sexy, you know, after dark type of voice, let us know.
It's the Good Wife After Dark. I like that.
The Good Wife After Dark. Well, what can we say about this episode? I think we found out a lot about what's going on in Alicia's mind. You're talking about this being my show. I think it was completely Alicia's show. And we found out there were some complex, sexy slash horny kind of things going on in this episode. But of always, Alicia's still running for state's attorney's office. And it seems as if she and Prady are now neck and neck. And they're getting ready to go do an editor's board interview, which can make or break this election. It seems that this editor's board, if you win or if they endorse you, you get 2 points, and it can make or break this election. Alicia's preparing for this, and she can't get her mind to stop spinning with all these other interesting things that come up. So I have to say, off the top, I think with this interview, the thing that's stopping her the most is she has Frank Prady in her head. She's listening to all the things they said before, and I think it's molding and shaping what she wants to say. Instead of just responding to what they're asking, she's trying to respond in a way that not only makes her look good, but also adheres to whatever standards and rules that she and Prady put together when they were having their side conversations, which I think may take away from some of her effectiveness in this interview. And one of the main questions that's coming up is Lamon Bishop. We can never get away from good old Lamon Bishop. And he's been described as the biggest drug dealer in town. And I did like his tie this week, I just want to say. An article comes out that's accusing Lamon Bishop of supporting Alicia and actually putting together her PAC. So they're wondering if Alicia and Lamon are actually in cahoots together, and if, because there's this wiretap where Lamon says that he, don't worry about an arrest, I've already bought the next essay. So I guess my thing is, let's talk about her definition of truth and what her answer should be. In my opinion, given her knowledge, Lamon did tell her he was going to support her PAC, but we haven't seen any confirmations of his wiretapping. Lamon's a really intelligent guy. So if he says this, he's saying it for a reason. He's saying it to get next to Alicia and trying to intimidate her, but we don't know whether he definitely did it or not. So for me, I think her responding to the question and saying, are you in cahoots with Lamon Bishop? The answer should be no.
And I think truth is not what Johnny said it was.
Yeah.
Johnny said about truth doing the most good, getting into the office or whatever. That's maybe like utilitarian theory. But it's not truth. Truth is when the editorial board asks her about Lamond, she has to actually answer with the truth the answer is.
So what do you think, Bobby? And if you can, you know, share with us, what do you think her answer should be, yes or no?
I think her answer is yes. It has to be yes. I don't know if she'll say it, but it should be yes because She knows that he said to her he's coordinating with the pack. He created the pack. So she knows in her heart that that's the truth.
Yeah, I guess it depends on, for me, I would go with the answer being no because there's no confirmation. And true, do I think Lamond lied about it? But we don't know. And she can't coordinate with the pack, so she can't confirm. I think her answer should be no.
That's the lawyer's truth.
Absolutely. And especially if they add in the qualifier, to your knowledge, the answer is no, because to her knowledge, she can't confirm it. Now, we would love for everyone out there, what do you think Alicia should have answered, yes or no to Lamond Bishop question? And I also think it's, in her mind, I think I was surprised because, I mean, I think she did a smart thing. First, she saw herself talking to Lamond about this and saying, you know, he's saying, what do you want me to do? And she's saying, withdraw yourself from the pack. Then she rethought it and said, no, let me get Kalinda to do it because the last thing I need to do is to stand in this man's kitchen and say, I really wish you would withdraw yourself from the pack. That just makes her guilty off the top. So we bring Kalinda into the mix. Now, I have to say off the top of, you know, out of all the different topics, and we'll run through all of them quickly, the one that struck me the most was the Peter and Kalinda thought that ran through her head. You know, we've heard tons of speculation about Alicia and Kalinda's character not being in the same frame for, what, 4-plus seasons now. And this may be the writer's way to kind of answer that question for us as to why Alicia and Kalinda are not in the same scene. I mean, if it were me and I knew you slept with my husband, I completely get it and understand it. It's just that the topic has never really been brought up again, or Alicia's never mentioned it again. So for it to come up and to know that whenever she thinks of Kalinda, you see this door opening and it's dark inside and Peter standing there going, Kalinda, I've been thinking about you. And Kalinda says, I've been thinking about you too.
And then that Peter quote when he says in one of her fantasies, why is it okay for you to do it but not me? Because she's thinking about Will and Johnny, and we got to get to Will in a second, and Finn Pulmar and all these people. But Peter's been running around too, and he's the one who gets criticized for it.
Absolutely.
Which he deserves the criticism. Don't get me wrong. Peter's awful. But Alicia's not a saint.
Yeah, and I think that's even more important to say, given that this is in Alicia's mind. We go back and forth between the real and, I don't want to say fantasy, but let's say her subconscious or conscious. But even if no one else knows about, let's say, Alicia and Will, Alicia knows about it, so she knows she's not squeaky clean. So you're right for Peter to say, why is it okay for you and not for me? And as I remember, Alicia was the one who demanded this arrangement. You do whatever you want to do. I'll do whatever I want to do as far as the outside is concerned and our political careers. We're a couple. But she was the one who put this on the table. He, you know, would always say, I'm a flawed person, but he never said he didn't love her. He never said he didn't want to be married to her. So she put this out there. But again, and you can tell in her mind, she continues to punish him. And she even said it when she was talking to, I think it was maybe, Johnny Elfman or someone in her mind. And she was like, she was talking to the preacher. And she said, he slept with Kalinda. He slept with Romana. He sleeps with whores or prostitutes. But even still, you know what you've done and also what you're planning to do, because we also found out in this episode what she wants to do with Johnny Elfman, and it ain't win the election. I mean, it's just not. I mean, it was pretty, I'm not going to say it was graphic, but I mean, I was surprised by the thoughts that she was having about Johnny Elfman. I mean, I think he's hot. I totally get it. But I was surprised that she brought that out, and that was so prevalent in her mind. And it wasn't just Johnny Elfman. She popped back and forth from Johnny Elfman to Finn, and then also this Will fantasy came up. And in my mind, Will needed to come, because I think the conversation she had with Will was, I miss you, you know, I don't know what's going on. But also it was a thing of, I think she needed to have Will come to get some type of closure so she could really open that door for Johnny. I would love to hear what everybody thinks. What's the reason why Will came back in this episode? Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't the real Will.
Not the real Will. I have a question for you, though, and for our viewers, too. Alicia, as a woman with power, as a woman in politics, she can go one of three ways on sex. She can either go very asexual and not have it be a part of her life. Mm-hmm. She can go very, I don't want to use the word, but whore-ish, yeah, and kind of and kind of look like a, not that she is, but people could portray her as a floozy, or she could go very sexually empowered and say, you know, Peter, you had sex in the governor's office. I'm going to have sex because it's okay in my life. I'm going to have sex with who I want to. Mm-hmm. And I think there's three choices that she has. So for you and for our viewers, which road is she going down? You know, because today she had so many sexual fantasies about so many different people, mm-hmm, and so many things that were wrong. You could look at it and say, Alicia, keep your legs together, pejoratively. But you could also look at it and say, Alicia, you have right to have sex just like anybody else does. You know, and if you have an arrangement with Peter and he's doing it, and you can do it too. You can empower yourself to do that.
Right.
So go, girl, you get yours.
I mean, I think for me, you're right. I mean, she and Peter have this arrangement.
Well, not to interrupt you, but that's, I guess, the biggest part of that is that's one of the big things with women in politics. And we've talked about it with Alicia before. Whether you're tough or you're a bitch, you know what I mean? Whether you're approachable or you're easy. And women kind of get this double standard where men, if you're tough as a man, oh, he's a hard ass. I respect him a lot. If you're tough as a woman, oh, she's a bitch. So it's like, wait a second. If Alicia exercises sexual agency, does that automatically make her a whore? I don't think so.
No,
but
I don't.
People will.
Yeah, no, totally people will. And I think that's the reason why she's kept her relationships so on the down low and quiet. And even when she does choose someone, she's very discreet about it. I mean, she and Will wouldn't ever just come out in public because, you know, she and Peter do have this arrangement. And as the minister reminded her, you are still married. And she understands what the arrangement means. The arrangement means, yes, I can do whatever I want to, whatever that means at the time. And I think Lewis Canning's statement to Alicia saying, I'm much more consistent than you at the end of the episode, pretty much sums up Alicia for me, because she's kind of all over the place sometimes and you don't know how consistent she is. So
yeah.
I think she's choosing whatever, you know, however she wants to express herself sexually, always under the confines, though, that I have this arrangement with Peter, but I'm also running for state's attorney, or I'm also the partner in a major law firm, or I'm also the mother of a college student and a high school student. So as much as she may want to give herself this complete sexual freedom, I think she'll always confine herself in some shape, form, or fashion by what her life is.
Is that because of her station as a woman and being a public figure and worrying about a double standard? Or is it just because of her family situation and the fact that she's a public figure? Because I think those are two different. They definitely intertwine, but those are two different things.
I think both. I think for her, both.
If she were single with no kids, could she approach it differently?
Oh, I think absolutely.
Yeah.
I think absolutely, because even if, let's go back to before the show started, and she wasn't she wasn't out there as a partner in practicing, she was a mom of two kids, I think that was still, given what we know about Alicia, define how she would handle herself sexually. So I do think she always has some kind of definition or something that's confining her. That's why her mind, she can allow her mind to go completely wherever she wants to. And I think seeing her, what she was thinking, her thoughts, what she was thinking about Johnny, was also very interesting, because she kissed him once and then she excused it. You know, remember she kissed him in the parking lot after they won something, but then she excused it and said, you know, oh, it's nothing. I was just excited. You know, it doesn't mean anything. But in her mind, they're having a conversation about the campaign as she buttons his shirt and unbuttons his shirt. She's asking him questions about how do I answer Lamon Bishop question as he's kissing on her shoulder and rubbing up and down her body when she has on lingerie. So it's a very different thing as to what she may want and what she expresses. And I think we'll see more in time, but I even still think that's going to be very calculated. And I think it's because of all of it, because she's a mom, because she's married, because she's a public figure, because she's an attorney. I think Alicia has a lot of because ofs that stop her from doing whatever she wants to do. But I would love to see Finn come back. I'm always a big fan of Finn, and I've missed him these last couple of weeks.
There's a little Finn piece of news. I was putting news together before I lost my voice.
Oh.
And we can talk about it next week when Allison comes back too. But just real briefly, side note on Finn, the Wall Street Journal interviewed Matthew Good, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him about, are you coming back to Good Wife next season? And he said, you know, we haven't talked about it yet.
What?
So, I don't know.
I say again, what? I am not happy to hear that, because I was looking forward to the Finn, Johnny, Alicia love triangle.
Finn is on what? Downton Abbey?
Downton Abbey, I heard.
So that's a big, and he's a British actor, so I think there's a whole, I didn't read the whole interview, but I think it's an idea of him wanting to go back home.
Right.
You know, so I don't know if there's a, I don't know. I'll have to look at this again. We can talk about it next week in News and Gossip, but just a real little tip for you guys.
I'm not happy. And those British actors are so doggone good. He can do two or three shows at one time. I don't want to hear that. I want him back. I want him back. I want him. I'll say it three times. I want Finn back. I really thought there was going to be some type of love triangle because the Alicia Finn thing seemed to just fizzle. And we had someone this week on YouTube comment and say, I want the Johnny Elfman Finn triangle to come back. Where is Johnny? Where's the love triangle? And so we did get a little of that this week. But speaking of wanting somebody back, Michael J. Fox was back this week.
Yeah, thank God. And we have good YouTube comments, by the way, every week.
We do
have a couple
of
really good YouTube comments.
We have great YouTube comments, and we hope you keep them coming this week and every week. But Michael J. Fox came back this week, and we love to see him as Lewis Canning. And so there's this lawsuit, this wrongful eviction lawsuit, which this came out of nowhere. I mean, we knew this happened weeks ago, but Lewis is back and bringing it up again. And he's questioning the fact that Diane was able to evict the law firm. And he's suing for $12 million. I guess even a bigger question is the fact that his health is deteriorating, right? And so, like Alicia said, but you say you play that card every day. I mean, it's been 3 months since you right at the cusp of death's door. So what's really going on? So we get Howard involved, which is always fun.
Howard is a useful idiot.
Yeah, he's always fun to have him around. Whenever he comes, you're like, oh, this is going to be good. But we've heard him about taking the pants off before. Like, that is his thing to do when he takes a nap. He takes those pants off, and I get that. So Lewis is suing for $12 million, but he's willing to settle for $4 million. But we can't figure out where he thinks his inn is, and we realize that it is, oh, go home, Howard. Please don't go home, Howard.
No, Howard, retire. It's over.
No, never retire, Howard.
He's hurting the law firm.
No, let me tell you. After working in a law firm, you need some comic relief. And Howard is the comic relief. So you need Howard as much. You need him around as much as possible. I love Howard and the fact that you want him to retire, but then what is he going to do? If he retires, he's going to come to the office and hang out every day.
That's better than him being on the hook for clients. Let him come hang out in a golf shirt and talk about his grandkids. I don't know.
No, I love it. Please. I like Howard to come, and I love when he's like, ooh, bagels. Like, his mind is just never where it needs to be. Except he got this story right this time about being Diane's proxy.
Yeah.
But really, what do we think? I mean, there came a very interesting conversation between Lewis and Alicia when after they, you know, really got down to the brass tacks. And he was like, she was like, what is this really about? You were supposed to be on death's door. Your kidney transplant that you had didn't take. And you're spending your last couple of hours, minutes, days fighting us over a lawsuit. Is it strictly about winning? And he was like, yeah, what else would it be?
Remember, though, and this is all these conversations here, all of this are what people are saying in Alicia's head.
Right, in Alicia's head.
So Lewis's motives may be very different. That's just what she can put onto it. But I think it is that. Lewis is a total gamesman. He always wants to win. It's not the law for him is not it's not a profession, and it's not like if you sue somebody, you're really worried about your reputation or winning the case. When he takes your case, it's not about that. It's about the game of playing chess with the other lawyer.
Right.
So for him, it doesn't matter if he dies tomorrow. He wants to keep playing chess.
But is that who Lewis really is? Because
I think so.
When his wife, when Alicia went to see Simone at the hospital, and she said, oh, that's Lewis, always worrying about other people. I was shocked. Like, we've never seen that part of him. And I do understand people can separate their personal from their professional life. But I would ask you, Bobby, and I would definitely ask everyone out there, too, which one do you think is the real Lewis? Will the real Lewis please stand up? Is he this loving, caring person?
I think it's both of them. Because, you know, he doesn't have to sue his kids, obviously.
Right.
So he can go home, he can be a dad, he can enjoy whatever it is. But work is what makes him come alive to the point where he's not suing Floragagos to win. The money, it's not about the money, it's not about the office space. You know that he didn't stress that hard for new office space because he's established, he makes money. It's more about just the victory of being in court, going toe-to-toe against somebody, and winning for the thrill of winning.
Well, I guess if that is the case, I was a little disappointed because In the beginning of the episode, Alicia was gung-ho on beating this man at his game because she thought it was a game, too. Like, what is your angle? What are you trying to get? She's going back and forth. Like, what are our pros? What are our cons? Why does he think he's so confident? Then having a conversation with him and realizing that possibly maybe he really is sick, she started to soften. And I know it had to do with the strategy. You know, she said to Diane and Carrie, oh, it's because he could use his illness against us. But I really think the conversation that, yet again, she had with Lewis in her head really softened her approach to what she was thinking. So that makes me think, is Alicia really as tough as we, as she comes across and she pretends to be? Because one conversation, like I said, in her head with Lewis, because I mean, she had one phone call with him and then he was in the hospital. We don't really know what he would have said to her, but this is what she was thinking he would say to her. And it made her turn and say, okay, I don't want to give him $4 million, but I'll settle with him in some shape, form, or fashion. So is Alicia, does she really have this harder outer shell like that we've been seeing?
You remember the show last week, the episode, and she's giving advice to their client about how to answer questions on the stand and how to tell the truth without telling the truth and all these shrewd legal tactics that a defense attorney would give, which makes her look like a capable lawyer who can, it's just water off her back. She can just whatever. Nothing's taken personally. Then this week she turns around and everything in her head is personal.
Everything
is the worst case scenario. Everything is Peter confronting her and then whoever confronting, you know, all this stuff is personal. It's like, wait a second. If we want the real person to stand up, it's not the real Lewis. It's the real Alicia.
Right.
Is she a capable lawyer who could do the state attorney's job like she proved kind of last week? Or is she, not to be too cruel about it, but is she an idiot in her own head like it was this week? She spun completely out of control in her head.
Yeah, she did.
When does that bite her in the ass?
Well, that's going to be my next question, because I think is we were watching the episode in the beginning when she had the two notepads and she had Frank Prady and trying to get ready for the interview on one side and she had the lawsuit on the other side, the Canning lawsuit on the other side, and she went back and forth and back and forth. And in my mind, what it made me really think of was, I know Alicia wants to be state's attorney. We've never heard a really good reason why she wants to be state's attorney. She's, you know, neck and neck with Prady in this race. But is Alicia really capable of being a state's attorney? Because we know she can be a great defense attorney. And I don't know a lot of people, but most of the people that I know go from being, you know, working as a DA or a state's attorney or city's attorney, and then they go would be a defense attorney as opposed to the other way around. So I'm wondering how ingrained is this defense attorney, you know, thought process and question. She's so used to being on the defense. How easy is it going to be for her to be on the offense? So I truly question, and everyone out there, let me know what you think also. I question how effective Alicia can really be as state's attorney.
And not only she, if she were here today, if the character of Juliana Margulies were here today, Alicia would say to you, well, you know, I'm juggling two things. I'm juggling Floragagos and this campaign. And when the campaign ends, if I win, I'll just be a state's attorney. I will recuse myself from Floragagos and I'll have one job. That's true. But to be a public figure and a state's attorney, you are now forever a politician. You're always campaigning in a way. There are always fundraisers. There's always, you know, babies to kiss and hands to shake or whatever they say. So you're effectively signing up for two jobs for the rest of your term from now on, and you've proven thus far that two notepads is a great idea. You can't do two jobs.
Right.
You can't. You're not good at it. You split the difference on both, you don't do well at either.
Right. And most people become defense attorneys after working for the state because they don't lose that state's attorney mentality, so they're able to be a better defense attorney. I don't think if Alicia becomes state's attorney, will she be able to drop and let go of the defense attorney type of, you know, side to her. So, and she questioned the definition of truth. And, like, I'm just really curious as how effective she'll be in this office. I will say for the Frank Prady character, he's been very consistent about his honesty. He's been very consistent about what message he wants to bring. He's been very, you know, honest and consistent, even in front of the camera where we've seen him in the public eye, but he's also talking to Alicia. And he even said in Alicia's mind, the definition of truth is truth. And sometimes you just need to tell the truth. The definition has to stand for something. How can we have any type of civilization if everyone's going to change the definition of truth? He's been a very consistent person. Alicia has not been. Who do we think is going to make a better state's attorney? If we had to vote, who would we vote for? Would it be Alicia or would it be Frank Prady to do the job of state's attorney in Chicago? I don't know if Alicia is the right person. in my opinion, for the job.
Frank Prady is just milk toast, though. He is boring.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, 100%. I didn't say he had any pizzazz or you know.
Were you doing his voice just now?
Oh, no. Oh, I kind of had the head thing, though, right? Oh, yeah. You know, I kind of had the head thing. Not even on purpose.
He's just boring. Even his beard is boring. Like, it's very well. It's just everything about him is, like, too put together, you know? Which, when you're picking a state's attorney, you want somebody who's put together. So that's probably a good thing.
Right.
But it's both of them, in different ways, are the opposite of Castro.
Right. Oh, now,
of course.
Did you just say the
but
C
not,
word?
Not just for the lack of corruption. I just mean like in personality ways and mm-hmm. everything they do. They're both very opposite to Castro, which in most ways could be a good thing. But how does either one of them convince most of Chicago? And spoiler alert, most of Chicago does not look like either one of these people.
Oh, stop joking. You're so right. I mean, yeah, not even hardly.
How do you relate to most, and not even just a race thing but a class thing.
Absolutely.
With both these people, an education thing, which is what happens whenever you run. Most politicians are very well educated relative to a public that isn't, so that's across the board. But how in a huge city like Chicago do you relate to people for either one of these people? I'm surprised there hasn't been another serious, like, write-in candidate.
Right.
You know, I know Finn was toying with joining or whatever, but like a serious, like, community activist, public defender.
A Cory Booker type of character.
Exactly.
Would have come in and kind of swooped the whole campaign thing.
Barack Obama community organizer.
Mm-hmm. That would have come in and, like, changed the whole atmosphere.
And just mopped the floor with both of them.
Totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, that's a really good point. And the last thing I kind of wanted to bring up was everything that happened in Alicia's mind and what we learned about her thinking on both of her kids. Both Zach and Grace came back in this episode. And I always find her relationship with Grace to be so interesting. So Zach came back, I guess, because she thought they may have. She was trying to prepare to see if they were going to ask her a question about Zach and his abortion with his 15-year-old girlfriend. But my question is, why did poor Zach always have to be on the park bench like a homeless person with two plastic bags in his hand?
I think not to make a sweeping generalization, which I totally am, but this isn't always true, but this goes back to Alicia and Frank being out of touch with most of Chicago. The community that Alicia lives in is very well off. You're the governor's wife. You're well to do.
Right.
And her law firm and everything. And I think there's a certain expectation of your children in that community that you will go to school, you'll get a master's degree, you'll get a finance career, whatever that is, whatever the specifics are. And when Zach had such a major mess up so early in his life, to a lot of people, getting your girlfriend pregnant is life. You have to deal with
it.
To this class of people, getting your girlfriend pregnant is shameful. We don't deal with that. We don't talk about it. You're forever branded as different now. And it's like, you know, if Zach's mom and dad were, you know, cooks at the local McDonald's, they would react to this situation very differently than Alicia would.
Right.
You know, because they've probably seen life in a different way than Alicia has.
Yeah.
Whereas Alicia can say, Zach, you're expected to go to Georgetown, get your PhD at Harvard, do blah, 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 blah. This is not part of the plan.
But I think it's so interesting because, like Zach even said, as he sat on that poor park bench, why does everyone use me as an example of something bad?
But
I'm at Georgetown.
That's the point. So he's forever branded. He can go to Georgetown. He can go to Harvard. But in Alicia's mind, he still had that huge, shameful mess up. And it doesn't ruin him as a person, but it does taint him in a way.
But I think it's so hypocritical.
I think it's
fascinating to really get an idea of how a parent truly feels about their child at a particular time. Given the fact that we all know kids are not perfect, and we always wonder, you know, have we gained our parents' trust back? Did we disappoint them? How they view us? So to get this picture of how Alicia feels about Zach, and it's not this rosy thing with him being all dressed up in prep coat clothes and going to, you know, Georgetown and making straight A's. She has him destitute on the park bench in the cold, right?
Yeah.
So I think it was really interesting that the writers opened us up to that, which is not a perspective that you see, especially for that class. But I also find it to be so hypocritical because of what we said before. Alicia knows what Peter's done. Alicia knows what she's done. So yes, your son might have made this mistake, and, you know, whether you believe in what he did or not, he attempted to fix it the best way he could given where he was in his life. But Peter and Alicia, at least you're not giving him any rope because you know what you have done. You know what you plan to do. You know what Peter have done. You know what you guys have done as a couple. You two have this arrangement where you're not living together, but you're pretending. I mean, it just seemed to be a little much for the kid. And he's just like, come on, Mom. What? I mean, how long are you going to hold this over me? Even so much so that at the end of the episode, when she sat on that park bench with him in her mind and apologized, he even questioned and said, do you really?
Yeah.
So I was, like, blown away that they brought that back. And I hope they explore that more because I would love to see the conversation, a real conversation between she and Zach, where they try to clear this up.
Yeah.
And then Grace and her faith, whether her faith was wavering or not, came into this episode. And the thing that I find interesting is the fact that even though Alicia doesn't believe, she's such a strong supporter, not even a supporter. It's almost as if she's pushing Grace into having this faith and being a part, you know, having this belief, because she thinks she's so afraid of what will happen to Grace if she doesn't have it.
And I think deeper than that, we talked about this last week. You want your kids to do better than you, generally speaking. Alicia, I think, is pushing Grace so hard for the faith, or at least cheerleading so much, you know, Grace, figure it out, keep your faith, blah, 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 that Alicia feels guilty for being an atheist, or whatever she wants to call herself, agnostic, whatever. But she feels guilty for not being faithful, and so she wants to project it onto Grace to say, you'll do better, and that'll absolve my sins. Mm-hmm. Whereas somebody like me watches this and says, Alicia, you have nothing to feel guilty about.
Right.
You shouldn't believe. If you want to believe, go ahead. If you don't want to believe, you're totally cool. But in her own mind, I think she feels so guilty about that, that it's important that Grace wins because she already lost.
And I guess me viewing it, because she is such a proponent of Grace, as you continue having her faith in winning, as you say, to me that almost makes Felicia a believer, because she almost feels as if Grace is believing and has faith, she's one person, a good person. As we found out today, they use the word good and bad. If Grace continues to believe and have faith, she's a good person. And if she doesn't, she's going to end up pregnant, smoking, you know, sniffing glue.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it works in Alicia's mind. So, and their relationship is so interesting because I always feel as if Grace is the parent who's leading Alicia. And in this episode, it made me feel like they didn't know anything going on in each other's lives. And it's like, do they see each other? I mean, she's a teenager, so you know how that goes down. But I just feel as if whenever they talk, Grace is just this calming figure that helps Alicia figure it out every single time.
And the thing you point out about either Grace gets her faith or Grace sniffs glue and gets pregnant, that dichotomy, I think, is the dichotomy right now of religion in political life. And all of our public figures have to go on air in some way, you know, presidents and senators, and have to profess their, you know, worship of God and Jesus Christ and all. And if you really profess it and if you really worship it, that's great. You can obviously be a Christian and be a politician
in this country.
But I am waiting for the day when a major politician comes out and says, I don't believe in anything, because this dichotomy still exists in the mass, I think, cognizance of this country, maybe, of the general public, that if you were a politician running for president or state's attorney and you said, hey, I'm an atheist, I don't believe in anything, I have a personal moral structure, that means you're going to, like, sniff frickin' glue.
That's,
you know? And most people know that's not true, but I think anybody who came out today, if one of these presidential candidates in 2016 came out and said, I'm an atheist, I believe in nothing, their stock would drop through the floor the next day.
I don't think our country, because of...
We're not there.
And, you know, where the Constitution comes in, and we're not there. And we're very much open to everyone's difference of opinions and sexual orientations, but we're not there.
That is one we're not there.
We're totally not there.
A lot of people are there, and they're silent about it.
Yeah.
But it's that same idea with Alicia and Grace, and she has that dichotomy in her head. Either you're a Christian, so that means you have a moral structure and you're a good person, or you're going to sniff glue. It's
right.
Like, wait a second. No, what?
Right.
I'm not a Christian, but I don't sniff glue.
It's true. Yeah. No, it's. I thought it was very strange to see that in Alicia's mind, that the spectrum. And it's the spectrum that she has for Grace, whether she's pregnant, sniffing glue, and now Zach, whether he and his girlfriend had the abortion or not. So it's this extreme with either one of them.
Yeah.
I think we covered everything. Any more news and gossip? I don't have any. You?
No, that's it. I want to bring a couple news pieces up next week when my voice is back.
How about that? We got that news sort of coming up. So let's get to predictions.
Oh, goodness.
And now, you're after Buzz TV predictions.
Bobby, what you got?
Don't make fun of my voice. I have... have no idea.
No?
I mean, the obvious predictions are, you know, Johnny and her are going to sleep together. We saw in that little preview something weird's going to happen.
Right.
If you want my prediction about that, I think Johnny's going to turn her down.
I would like that.
I think for whatever reason, maybe he's not interested. Maybe he's focused on the campaign. Maybe he's got a wife. Maybe he's gay. I mean, for whatever reason he gives, I think he's going to turn her down.
I would like to see that. I would totally like to see that. I think my prediction holds true. I think I made it weeks ago. I think Alicia's going to lose this campaign.
I'm starting to agree with you.
I think she's going to lose. It's not, you know, episode 22, 23, so it's not going to be this cliffhanger for the next season. And also this episode, I felt as if kind of the Diane Carey, Alicia, you know, figuring out how to handle things, where it seems like Diane and Carey were this, you know, dynamic duo, and they just touched base with Alicia when necessary. And I think it would be very interesting if she loses the campaign and has to come back, and it really has to be the three of them running the firm again. I think that's going to be an interesting story. So I just don't, sorry, Alicia, I don't think you're going to win.
And I think Frank Prady, David Hyde Pierce, has proven to be too interesting with Frank Prady that just like we've dealt with Castro in the past, if David Hyde Pierce won the state's attorney's race, you'd still see him a lot. Mm-hmm. Alicia would have cases against them and whatever. So you could still keep Prady in the scope of the show.
True.
So I could definitely see her losing this thing. Or more specifically, I could see a Peter Florek scandal bringing her down.
Yeah, I can't wait for next week, because when Eli says to Alicia, you do not want to have an enemy in Peter, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
All right, I think we wrapped it up for the week. So, Bobby, where can they find you?
Twitter, @ Bobby DeMuro.
And hopefully next week Bobby will have a voice. I'm Tara Johnson. You can catch me on Twitter and Instagram @ TJ Wagging Her Tail. Thank you so much for being with us. And as we said, make sure you comment and talk to us all week long. We can't wait to hear what you have to say. Agree with us, disagree with us. You know, it's all good. We can talk it out. So till next week, thank you so much, and we'll be back.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.